In this episode, we talk to Wesley Carter at the Amplify Your Process Safety podcast. Now, we talked with Wesley a while back. In this episode, we are going to talk about emergency action plans, planning for emergencies. And this is a really, really important topic. It's one that we often take for granted. We don't practice this enough and communicate it enough with our employees. And of course, with Amplify Your Process Safety podcast, we talk about process safety, but we're going to talk about process safety. We're going to talk about general industry, where they overlap, where they don't. And hopefully you get what I got out of this, which is, you know, where we can continue to improve in the area of emergency action plans, emergency response, planning in general. So there's a point in this episode where if you go to the Amplify Your Process Safety podcast, you won't hear this because Wes is a gentleman and he took that out. He was kind enough to take it out, but I completely screwed something up in this episode. And, you know, it's funny. I'm going to leave it in because it's hilarious. And we were talking before we hit the record button, as we often do, and we were talking about a very specific tragedy that occurred. And Wes is like, yeah, we're going to talk about that. That's a perfect example. Let's go ahead and talk about that one. And then when it came time, you know, he set it up. He asked me a softball question about an incident that occurred and what year. And I immediately got the wrong catastrophe, a sad testament to how many catastrophes we have. I was 1 year off, by the way. So in my defense, it was pretty close and it was early in the morning. But nonetheless, I thought it was hilarious, but it goes to show you how, you know, in podcasting, we kind of goof every once in a while, but this one wasn't so bad. I thought it was funny. I'm going to leave it in, but he was such a gentleman. He smoothed it over so well. He should have totally called me out on it. It was a great opportunity for him to just bust my chops about this, but he did not. That's what makes Wes such a great guy. And go over and check out the Amplify Your Process Safety podcast and see the fine work they're doing over there, Wes and Rob, on that podcast. But in this one, I left it in. You'll know it when we get to it. And let's go ahead and jump right into this episode.
Welcome to the Safety Pro Podcast, powered by iReport Source, helping you manage safety one episode at a time. With the constant regulatory and workplace culture challenges businesses face, we'll provide you with all the relevant information necessary to achieve a safer, more productive workplace. No management theories, platitudes, or guru speak, just actionable info you can use right away. Now here's your host, the safety pro himself, Blaine Hoffman.
Welcome to the Amplify Your Process Safety Podcast. I'm Wesley Carter. I'm here with Blaine Hoffman. You may have met Blaine before when him and I did a podcast together. And you said this was last August, Blaine?
Yeah, at the VPPPA National Safety Symposium in New Orleans.
And you're a podcast. You have your own podcast. It's been going much longer than my own podcast, the Amplify Your Process Safety Podcast. What is your podcast for our listening audience?
Yeah, it's the Safety Pro Podcast. It's how we met, and it's a great medium, and it's a great way to share this important information. It's also good for entertainment, but I think we both got into it for the same reasons, and I love collaborating with you, Wes. I learn a lot every time we talk, so I'm just going to take it all in on today's episode as well.
Mutual respect. It's good. I think, you know, the thing we point to, then it's probably going to get old if we continue to do these episodes of having to introduce it. But, while I primarily focus on process safety, you also focus on safety, but more from the occupational health and safety lens, correct?
Yep, that's right. More general industry. And I get into some theoretical stuff, but mostly the technical side. But I love what you're doing with PSM. I learn a lot. Those of us on the general industry side, as we will in this episode, we learn a lot from what other industries are doing and why they do it. And sometimes I scratch my head and wonder why we're not all doing certain things the same way. But that's why we're here talking about those differences and how we can continue to learn and improve.
Yeah. So today we're going to talk about emergency planning and response and kind of some takeaways for the listening audience. The format, what we like to go, our flow, what does the regulation say? And why is it important? You know, so that first question, Blaine, what does regulation, what does general industry say about emergency planning and response?
Well, general industry breaks it out into different topics. So, for example, fire prevention plans, right? And then they call this other emergencies. It's like just a very broad topic. So for the general industry, the standard under 1910-252 is an example. There's welding, cutting, and brazing. There are some requirements under that standard for fire prevention. They only mention one time in that standard, by the way, hot work. That's the only time you'll see that those two words, hot work. And we're all familiar with hot work permits, right?
Oh, yeah.
That only shows up one
time. Yeah, this requirement in PSM as well. Hot work, 1910-252, it points us to it.
Yep. And you'll only see it one time in general industry, and that's it. We also have under the fire protection, a similar standard as well. But you've got to cobble some different resources together to really get a full picture of what you're supposed to do in a general industry environment. It's not just one. The fire prevention and protection is sort of a very broad, standard. That's the most frequent one people go to. But there's medical emergencies. There's chemicals under HAZCOM. We have instructions under chemical protection, but it's not like PSM. So Wes, I'm really interested to hear what umbrella there exists under PSM to park all of these things.
Yeah, so the PSM standard, OSHA 1910-119, paragraph N, is emergency planning and response. And this is what it says. The employer shall establish and implement an emergency action plan for the entire plant in accordance with the provisions of 29 CFR 1910-38. In addition, the emergency action plan shall include procedures for handling small releases. Employers covered under this standard may also be subject to the hazardous waste and emergency response provisions contained in 29 CFR 1910.120, paragraph A, P as in Peter, and Q. This points you to 29 CFR 1910-38, but emergency action plans, so that's, they point you to the emergency action plans for emergency planning and response. When something else that goes with PSM is the risk management plan rule or RMP that's, overseen by the EPA. And the EPA highly focuses on the communities where these plants operate. So what's outside your fence, right? If you have this release, that's why you do RMPs. And so they also require you to coordinate with your local emergency planning commissions, and I love that requirement because, if we had a release at a facility, that is not the time you want to meet your first responders. I think that it makes good sense to meet your first responders, the people that you would, be involved with helping you coordinate evacuation if it was necessary, depending on where your facility's at or whatever. So I like that the RMP requirement to coordinate with your local emergency planning commission. That way, who your first responders are. In that introduction, hopefully you're establishing this is the type of hazardous chemicals we have on site. These are our worst case scenarios. If we had to do an evacuation, how would we coordinate that? You do that all ahead of time. That way, you're not doing this on the fly, which obviously have some pitfalls. So emergency action plans, Blaine, you have quite a bit of experience in this, no?
Yeah, as a former first responder myself, we did, pre-planning, right? We would go into businesses in our community and do just that. And so it's sort of two sides to the same coin. While you don't want the first time you meet your first responders to be when they're responding, first responders don't want to have that first encounter with a business to be, when it's hitting a fan. We want to know, I know exactly how to get into the back lot. I know exactly what door they're referencing or which plant on their campus. I know exactly what's inside. I know what chemicals they have inside. I know what gear we're going to need. And that's crucial. You I would say more often than not, local authorities, response authorities, they will discover that some of the equipment and even PPE they have may not be appropriate for the chemicals or substances that are on site. For example, if anything contains certain types of acids in a gas form, the seals on your, you know, face pieces and respirators, they're going to be gone, right? Your turnout coat, you know, your bunker gear, things like that. So it's really, really important that you do pre-planning. And in general industry, in 1910 subpart E, it's titled Exit Routes and Emergency Planning. I mean, it just lumps these things together. Emergency Action Plans is 1910.38, but it's maybe it's because I had the fire background and I don't think it goes far enough, but you're right. I think one of the keys is to engage your local authorities and be thinking about, you know, four walls, four blocks, 4 miles, we used to say in the franchise business, owning some stores. When it comes to marketing, you know, how you impact your customers, well, think of it this way. The local community, they're our customers too, right? And, you've talked about the EPA, and that's another great resource to look at for some guidance is, you know, how are we potentially impacting, you know, just off-prem right outside the fence?
Yeah. You know, you mentioned, you know, while you were going through that, you were talking about the emergency exits. You know, 1910.38, which the PSM standard directly points to, is emergency action plans. And I think, you know, I can tell, like, just the way you're speaking to this, you have quite a bit of experience and passion, not only on this side of the fence, but as being a first responder yourself, you know, in a previous life. And, you know, but one of the things I want to point to real quick is 29 CFR 1910.38. And that's emergency action plans. And just for the listening audience, I'm not going to go through all the details, but kind of the five high level things. And then there's more detail there is there's an application part. You know, this applies whenever, you know, an emergency action plan, this part 1910.38 is applicable whenever another part of the regulation points to it. They have some guidance on written and oral emergency action plans. And then they have a section on the minimum elements of an emergency action plan. That includes procedures for reporting a fire or other emergency, procedures for emergency evacuation, procedures to be followed by employees who remain to operate critical plants operations, procedures to account for all employees after evacuation, procedures to be followed by employees performing rescue or medical duties, you know, the name or job title of every employee who may be contacted by employees who need more information. And then it gets into, you know, employee alarm systems, training on your emergency action plan, and how often you have to review it, you know, whenever something else changes in the thing, in your, that impacts your emergency action plan. So, I wanted to do when I went through the, you know, I thought it was kind of weak when I went through 1910.119 and just pointed to it. I want to do it a little bit more justice, before we got into the importance of, emergency planning and response. So we got an interesting one we want to talk about, Blaine, about, you know, why emergency planning and response is important. And we've got an incident that I think everyone knows about that occurred April 15th, 1912. You know, what incident is that, Blaine?
Oh, are you talking about the shirt factory?
Yes, the shirt factory.
Yeah, that was an unfortunate one. Yeah. And, there's a couple of them throughout history that we can point to, but that one, that was brutal, absolutely brutal. And we're talking multiple floors, just the contents of the building itself, the building construction, the number of people that were in there at one time, locking doors, chaining doors, not being able to get out, right?
Yeah. And then... We had a major event in 1912, the Titanic.
Oh, right. That's right. We were just talking about this. My mind was going somewhere else.
You're good.
The Titanic, and we're not talking about the movie, right?
No, we had a, you know, so in 1912, a major event was the Titanic. April 15th, 1912, I'm sure for the listening audience, the Titanic was... it sank. And you know, the CCPS, the Center for Chemical Process Safety, they put out a process safety beacon, usually with industry partners. And there was one that was released in July 2012 talking about this. You know, if anyone, you know, we'll link to it in the show notes if anyone's got any, you know, wants to read more. But that is the Titanic for, that is a prime example of emergency planning and response gone terribly wrong. You know, and so Blaine, you know, why was the emergency planning so poor on the Titanic?
Well, first off, the shirtwaist factory fire, that was 1911. My goodness, I've got my catastrophes mixed up here. That's sad that we have that.
It's sad. It's sad. No, oh, no. Rob and I, you know, my business partner who I usually do, you know, co-host the podcast with, we talk about that, how unfortunate it is that there are so many incidents. You know, I'm pointing to the Titanic in 1912, and you know, you can go back that far in history and art and be pointing to a shirt factory and, you know, locked, you know, multiple floors, chained, you know, exit routes, you know, that was a catastrophic event. I mean, it's unfortunate we have so many. Keep going. What, you know,
Titanic is, you know, it's funny, I think. Honestly, just as my opinion, we've seen all kinds of documentaries on it, all kidding aside about the movie, but there have been documentaries on it. And I know you're going to school us a little bit on a resource you have on this topic. But I say, you know, they all got high on their own supply, right? They bought into, if I were to point to sort of an underlying theme, they kind of all bought into this whole, I don't want to say indestructible, but it's like, no, this can't be happening. Almost disbelief, right? This can't be happening.
Lifeboats for what?
Right? Why do we need lifeboats? There's no way this thing's going to sink. They did have lifeboats, though, but not enough. Did anyone know how to use them, Wes? I don't know. I'm not sure. That was also an issue.
Yep. Yeah, yeah. So they, you know, it's like you said, they had lifeboats, but not enough. It was almost like window dressing, right? Like they had said, okay, we'll put some lifeboats on there. And I don't know, maybe I was to make some passengers, you know, for peace of mind that, hey, we do have lifeboats. But yeah, that mentality is unsinkable. But yeah, now they have some lifeboats, which, you know, they've grossly missed how many they need because they don't need them, right? Air quotes. Do you think they weren't conducting lifeboat drills? Since they're not conducting drills, how to put them in the water, things like that, with not only the personnel, but many people on the ship didn't even know where to go or what to do. You know, that's how, you know, so it was, we're grossly lacking how many lifeboats we need. And then we don't even know how to put them in the water, and we're not going to tell people how to load them or even where they're at in the event of an emergency.
Yeah. And there are stories about during the emergency itself, the fact that you mentioned personnel not being trained, many of them, they had no idea what to do. And that's where we get this phrase. I don't know if you've ever heard this. It's we use this phrase whenever something terrible is happening and we're spinning our wheels on things that don't matter. We call it rearranging the deck chairs on the Titanic, right? it's like sales are tanking in the company, and we're talking about, you know, rearranging the cubicles or remodeling the office or I don't know, something like that. The expression is, it's like rearranging the deck chairs on the Titanic. What's the point? Right. So yeah, it's spawned sort of these various phrases to illustrate that, you know, things that were being done during the emergency just made no sense because they didn't, many of them didn't know what else to do.
Yeah. Yeah. There's, you know, this beacon points to, and I know this, the process safety beacon isn't, you know, changing, you know, in reinventing the wheel, you know, just highlighting some really important things, but, you know, many of the first lifeboats that actually left the Titanic were not full, and some people were reluctant to pull other people from the icy water for fear of capsizing their lifeboat. You know, so the people that did get in the boats, they're getting in the water, but they're not full. And then they don't want to save people. And then the decision to abandon ship was delayed while the captain and crew assessed the damage. I mean, it was, you know, there were so many things that, you know, stemmed from, that'll never happen. You know, so, We're going to, because we think it'll never happen, we're in this box of, you know, we're unsinkable. It'll never happen. Therefore, we're not going to take it seriously, you know, and that people would have lost their lives. I think, you know, anyone in history would agree with that, but many could have been saved if they had had a sufficient emergency action plan in the event that their unsinkable ship did start to take on water and was going to sink.
Yeah. Isn't that amazing that, you know, we're talking about 1912, you know, waist shirt factory, 1911, but we've got more recent case examples of this, you know, still driving policy today. It's sad that we still have to wait for something catastrophic to happen to be able to respond. You know, I wish we, as a society, I know it's not just in the U.S., it's around the world, but, you know, we're still very much reactive. It's like, well, nothing's happened so far. I mean, if it's not broke, don't fix it, right?
Yep. Yeah, absolutely. You know, and it's like you said, I mean, these things, you know, you pointed to, you know, we're talking about, and you go into 1911 and 1912, and there's been so many different events that you can point to a lack of emergency planning and response. And I wanted to point to one. You know, I've got this book that I go to often, and it's not, you know, it's not the go-to, you know, all be all, but it's a book called Incidents That Define Process Safety. And it's got a pretty good format the way it goes through certain events. And there's one that I think a lot of people may be familiar with, may not, but Seviso, Italy, in July of 1976, they had a release of a toxic substance. And I won't get into the reasons they had the release or anything like that. But what I wanted to point to was they had this pretty substantial release of a toxic vapor cloud. It was approximately 3.7 by 0.6 miles wide. And, you know, so they have this release, and, you know, what I want to point to in this emergency response, you know, when you talk about kind of some lessons learned or some takeaways, the company's initial behavior led to a subsequent suspicion about their motives. The firm denied knowledge of the toxic substances involved. 9 days passed before the firm confirmed that dioxin had been released. And for the listening audience, so they had this, it took them 9 days to confirm they had a toxic vapor cloud that had dioxin, which is one of the components in Agent Orange, you know, a toxic used in warfare. So only after 9 days after this release did the government authorities and the public learn that there was a grave risk and evacuations were started. An earlier evacuation would have led to less exposure to the affected human population. So not only did they have this release, but because they weren't quite sure, not prepared for understanding what they were putting in the air, did they have impact on humans? But they also, 3,300 animals were killed, and approximately 78,000 more were eventually slaughtered because of this. You know, so it's not the Titanic, you know, it's not the 1911, you know, incident you were speaking to, but it's just another example of, you know, what's, you know, about emergency planning and response. What are our worst case scenarios? What are the types of emergencies that could happen in our facility based on the hazards we have? And what if that event, if we had that emergency, are we prepared? You know, I think that's the biggest thing, you know, like not, and not discounting anything, you know, I'm not saying like, you know, every facility should prepare for, you know, the, you know, earthquakes, or maybe they should or something like that. But, you know, what are things that are likely to occur based on your kit, your plant, your facility, your building, things like that? And I think that's really what happened in Seviso. It points to, it kind of reemphasizes the same thing. If we did have that release, are we prepared not only to, you know, minimize, you know, the release from our facility, but also its impact on the community? And, you know, Seviso points to, you know, them just not being prepared for that release and the consequences that followed, you know, and because of that, it took them so long, more people suffered, and, you know, unfortunately, more animals were harmed because of it.
Yeah, and in general industry, you know, when we talk about fire prevention, for example, if you have 10 or fewer employees, you know, you don't even have to have a written plan. You could just communicate what your plan is orally, right? You could just say, hey, if we have a fire, here's what we're going to do.
Yeah.
You know, here's how we're going to get out. You don't have any requirements outside of that. but you know, the minimum provisions for a fire prevention plan, there's five, basically. List all major fire hazards, proper handling and storage procedures for hazardous materials, potential ignition sources, their control, the type of fire protection equipment necessary to control each major hazard. So that's the first bullet point, but it kind of touches on what you just talked about. The second one listed, proper handling and storage procedures for hazardous materials. You know, that's a big can of worms to open. I mean, and they just mention it briefly.
Yeah.
Gets us into HAZCOM. And then, of course, on the PSM side, you've got all kinds of stuff you could speak to. But you just mentioned Italy and everyone knows India. But proper handling and storage procedures for hazardous materials is key.
Yeah, when you say India, you know, you're pointing to Bhopal.
Bhopal. So procedures to control the accumulation of flammable and combustible waste materials. So just everything from housekeeping to storing waste materials, which gets into several other regulations. But I think it's key, you know, what folks, I think a lot of folks that I've come across over the years, they grossly underestimate the reach that this little section has. I say little because we know it's huge. It's why we're talking about it. But if you look at it on paper, it's not that big. I mean, I've got an OSHA fact sheet here. It's just a couple of pages long. And the third page, I would throw out half of it because it talks about, you know, where to go to get more information, how to contact OSHA. And it's got this big footer at the bottom. It takes up a lot of real estate. But yeah, it's I think it's we undersell the importance of this sometimes until something bad happens.
Yeah, it's like also when I was talking about the RMP, you know, what are our worst case scenarios? Coordinating with your first responders, being prepared, you know, doing drills, things like that. It's all important.
Worst case scenario, I like that. We used to say in the fire service, right? Murphy was always on the job. Murphy's Law, if you're familiar with that. But we would always say, you know, plan for the worst, hope for the best, right? But we were always planning for worst case scenario, like you said. And, you know, if you have a facility, I don't care if you just have one, you know, particular chemical out there, you need to look at that chemical all different ways. It's going to get into the air, it's going to get into the water, do we have a creek nearby, it's going to be going over the road on a truck, even if it's just, you know, a customer buying it and leaving with it, you know, you've got to protect yourself from all angles, and you should have a plan that addresses all of those things. So yeah, your emergency action plan, and that's the umbrella, the EAP, right? It talks about exit routes, fire prevention, spill response, handling and storing of these things. It's a big animal. I think that if you look at it if you look at the regulations, it's easy to be underwhelmed when you read it.
Yeah, and emergency planning response, highly, highly critical, very important to taking it seriously and getting it right. You know, we've seen time and time again when organizations historically have failed at this and the catastrophic consequences of failing at this, right? All right, Blaine. Any other thoughts?
No, I think I would say I would pull out another quote. I like these sometimes, right?
Yeah.
Learn from other people's mistakes. You're not going to live long enough to make them all yourself. You can look back at 1911, 1912, what was it, 1937, the Hindenburg, 72. We have all the information we need. And I know you've talked about this. How many more do we need to have happen? You know, so learn from the past and let that. Let those lessons be how you shape the future.
I like that. I like that a lot. Well, Blaine, I enjoyed discussing emergency planning and response. I appreciate you again for agreeing to do a co-podcast with me, call it a joint show. And until next time, I appreciate your time, sir.
Likewise, I look forward to the next one. All right, there you go. Wes, great job. I really appreciate the team over at Amplify to, you know, reach out and be willing to collaborate with me on these types of topics. I enjoy them a lot. I really enjoy talking with Wes, and I hope to do more in the future with them. Emergency action planning. Take a look at your plans. Ask yourself, you know, those three P's I harp on, right? Paper, people, places. Do you have a good written plan? Does it cover everything you need to cover in your facility and for your people? And speaking of people, the second P, do they understand the emergency action plan? Do they understand their role? Do they understand what they're required to do to maintain it periodically? Not just when an emergency occurs, you know, make sure they understand that. And then go out into the workplace. Make sure there are elements of the emergency action plan working for you in the facility across the sites, postings, signs, phone numbers. Make sure that they're maintained and kept up, that kind of thing. So the paper, people, places, make sure you cover the spectrum there with your emergency action plan. Look for the link for the Amplify Your Process Safety podcast. You have to go check that out. I don't care if you're in process safety or not. You're going to learn a lot from that podcast. Also, look for posts on LinkedIn for this episode and chime in. What aspects of the emergency action plan do you love? Do you hate? Do you have some best practices? Share with us. Jump in on the conversation over at LinkedIn, and I look forward to talking to you on the next Safety Pro Podcast episode.
Thanks for listening to this episode of the Safety Pro Podcast, powered by iReport Source, the all-in-one digital safety solution. For info on how you can request a free demo on all the capabilities of iReport Source to streamline your business's safety management system, head over to thesafetypropodcast.com. We look forward to helping you manage safety on the next episode of the Safety Pro Podcast.